CSN 1290, CFRW Winnipeg.
What a cool experience.
Your official home of the Winnipeg Jets. A division of Bell Media.
Third round of the shootout. Scoreless game. LaPierre making moves. Scores!
I know there's lots of speculation about our team and me individually.
Bufflin at the midpoint to Enstrom. Slap shot. Scores!
They could have scored four on that power play because Pavlik was superb.
4-1 winners over the Carolina Hurricanes.
The big plays. The big stories. The biggest news from across the hockey landscape. This is NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve on your home of the Winnipeg Jets and all things NHL. TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
You are listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve. I'm Richard Pollack, filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, and Michael Remus. On loan, of course, from Rick Ralph and the Roundtable. We're on for 1 hour tonight, as opposed to our usual 2 hours, because, of course, Paul Edmonds, an inside pitch, starts at the top of the hour, 7 o'clock sharp. We have two guests tonight. Mike Colligan of the Hockey Writers is going to join us to break down the Pittsburgh Penguins' activity this week. The Penguins acquired Brendan Morrow and Douglas Murray in a drive for the stretch run, and it appears to be, you know, going all out to win Lord Stanley Cup this year. He's going to join us right away. And at the bottom of the hour, at 6:30 Central Time, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News is going to join us to talk about the Sabres and what a wreck they are. A beautiful wreck, maybe, but a wreck nonetheless. And it looks like they're possibly going to purge their roster of a bunch of talented players coming up by Wednesday, April 3rd, which, of course, is the trade deadline, and full coverage will be available on TSN 1290 that day. Ezra, David, before we get into the Pittsburgh conversation, which I want to engage in right away, I want to quickly preview what else we're going to be discussing today, and that's the firing, of course, of Guy Boucher and the hiring by the Tampa Bay Lightning of Don Cooper. And then finally, we're going to be talking next segment about Jacob Trouba and the options that he has with respect to signing with the Jets, and the other options that he has could be signing with the in the CHL, could be staying in the NCAA. There's a little bit of gray regarding what exactly what effect that'll have on his entry-level contract. We're going to break down all of the options. We're going to get into the CBA discussion. And boy, it is really in-depth because, you know, as we were speaking about it before, we have an idea of what all the language means, but we're not 100% sure. First, let's start talking Penguins. Oh, not talking Penguins yet. Before we get Mike on the line, guys, I want to first ask both Ezra and David about the trades this week. Brendan Morrow and Douglas Murray, they add a certain amount of sandpaper to the Penguins roster. Do you think that what they add versus what the Penguins gave up, Ezzy, is a worthwhile addition?
If you look at the Pittsburgh Penguins right off the bat, where they are strong in as far as their prospect pool goes is defense. And when you consider that, first off, I think we got Mike on the line.
Mike Colligan of the Hockey Writers joins us on NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve. Mike, thanks for joining us tonight.
I think you're doing pretty well. You know, exciting game tomorrow night. Pens on a 13-game winning streak, so it's a team that's playing very well, but it's become a story that I think we've seen a number of times here in Pittsburgh over the last few seasons. A 10-game, 11-game, and 13-game winning streaks in the last 3 years during the season are becoming a regular thing, but it hasn't led to a lot of playoff success. So I think that'll be the big question, at least from the Penguins' perspective, as we head down the stretch and towards the playoffs.
And the Penguins, of course, tried to add to that talented roster this week. Well, didn't try to. They did. They added Brendan Morrow from Dallas and, of course, Douglas Murray from the San Jose Sharks. I guess, Mike, the first question we have for you is, are you surprised the Penguins acted so early as compared to some other teams in terms of acquiring talent before Wednesday's trade deadline?
You know what? I don't think I'm surprised at the timing as much. I think it's become part of general manager Ray Shiro's MO over the last 5 or 6 years of his tenure here in Pittsburgh to really lock in these types of deals as soon as possible. I think if you look back in his history, the Penguins had Marian Hossa a couple trade deadlines ago, and there was a situation where the team was trying to sign him to a long-term extension. It just didn't happen, and I think at the time, Shiro put all of his plans kind of to the side, just said, okay, I'll wait for Hossa, see what happens. And then when Hossa kind of turned his back on the team and went to Detroit for a one-year deal, I think Shiro realized he was really left with very little options. And since then, I think he's been just a totally different guy, a very proactive. And I think that's the situation he had here. He saw a market where there probably aren't going to be a lot of players available just due to the shortened season and the compressed schedule. But I think he figured out who he wanted. He figured out what the Penguins team needed and obviously went out and I think paid a little bit over the value of the guys that he's getting, but obviously felt that these were the two guys that he thought was needed for the Penguins to really upgrade and make themselves stand out in the Eastern Conference this year.
Mike, you wrote about the Brendan Morrow trade today for the Hockey Writers. And you kind of took an interesting angle, what he brings to the Pittsburgh Penguins, referencing some of the intangibles, what he did with Dallas against the San Jose Sharks in the playoffs. What are your overall thoughts on the trade?
Well, you know, that's certainly one half of it. Is you talk about a guy like Brendan Morrow, and I know Ray Shiro's mantra is to try and get guys in the locker room that haven't won a Stanley Cup before. The Penguins won a Stanley Cup with a very similar core in 2009. So the guys that are still around that have won that cup before, they're hungry for another one, but it's nothing can match the 14-year veteran like Brendan Morrow, who's never won a Stanley Cup and realizes his career's probably winding down, and bringing him into a locker room. I think that can change the dynamic. It could change an entire team's mentality. And it worked for them in 2009 when they brought in Bill Guerin, a guy that was, a lot of people said, was washed up, really wasn't producing in Long Island. And they brought him in. He contributed on Sidney Crosby's line, and it led to a Stanley Cup. So I think Shiro trying to maybe get a little bit more magic from that type of deal and bringing in Morrow, who I think we can all agree is certainly one of the better leaders and hardworking guys in the league. And as far as the cost aspect, they gave up a very, very top prospect, Joe Morrow, a great skating defenseman from the Western Hockey League, a guy that at one time they thought was their top prospect on D. So it wasn't a deal that came cheaply, and I think that's going to be the biggest factor. This team is really all in at this point. They've made these big deals. They've given up a number of assets for the future, and I think they see an opportunity here to really go after a Stanley Cup and see if they can get the second one under Shiro's tenure.
Well, Mike, that leads into the next question, which is, are the Penguins done making moves, or do you think they'll still be looking to add a forward?
I think they'll still be looking at it forward. I think that's exactly right. You know, they will stay in the Jerome Iginla sweepstakes until the end. I think there's no reason for them to drop out at this point. I don't think the price will come down to a level that'll make sense for them to add Iginla as well, but I think it makes sense for them to stay in just for the sole fact that they can drive that price a little bit higher for teams like Boston or anyone else in the Eastern Conference that they might be facing. I don't think they'll be serious about Iginla, but the one thing that they do really lack is kind of a fourth line, a face-off penalty kill type guy, a veteran. You know, I think of a guy like Boyd Gordon or a Sean Mathias in Florida. Some of those guys that you're never going to notice that type of move on trade deadline day. It'll come and go, and people will be focused on the bigger names. But those are the type of moves that I think really can be the difference in a Stanley Cup. And I think that's one of the minor aspects that the Penguins lack right now is really a guy that can win the critical faceoffs on the penalty kill. In recent weeks, we've seen Sidney Crosby actually going out and taking those important draws on the penalty kill. And it doesn't really make sense when you're talking about Crosby and really maximizing the situations that you put him in. I think the last thing you want is to be having the situations where you're forcing him onto the ice, killing penalties and taking these critical draws. I think that's where it wouldn't cost a lot to get maybe a Gordon or a Mathias, and it would probably be the one last move that Shiro makes between now and the trade deadline.
You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve, and we're talking to Mike Colligan of the Hockey Writers about the Pittsburgh Penguins angle of the recent trades for both Brendan Morrow and Douglas Murray. You know, Mike, Douglas Murray is an interesting guy in that, you know, not the most offensively skilled player, not the best skater, and some would say has even slowed down over the most, you know, past year or two. The Penguins needed maybe a left-side defenseman, a left-handed shooting defenseman who is more physical. Even though they need that, does he, at his specific talent level, actually prove to be an upgrade over what the Penguins already had?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think maybe the dynamic aspect of it is maybe what I would focus on. I don't know that he's necessarily any better than the eight defensemen they have at the NHL level right now. But I think, you know, when we talked earlier this season, the one thing that had really was standing out at that point was the fact that the Penguins weren't moving players out from in front of Marc-Andre Fleury and Thomas Vokoun, their backup goaltender. And I think it was an issue in a number of games where guys just were able to have second and third chance opportunities. And when you get into the playoffs, that becomes critical. That's where the goals are scored. It's not the pretty plays. It's usually the dirty goals. And I think that's what the Penguins felt they needed to upgrade. They needed to find that dynamic. And like you said, Murray maybe not a great skater, which is going to be an issue in a Penguins system that's pretty up-tempo, moves pretty quickly. But I think he brings that different element. That's going to be the biggest thing for him. He upgrades the power play, which isn't quite as good as it's – or the penalty kill, I'm sorry, that isn't quite as good as it's been in recent seasons. And I think that's exactly why he was brought in, just to give that different look. I think – you know, last summer, I know the team mandate was to draft what they called denters, guys that are going to leave dents in other players. And when you talk about Douglas Murray, as I'm sure you guys know, he's a guy that's a denter. He's a guy that's really going to, I think, you know, bring a different dynamic to this team. It's a little bit more flashy than some of the other Eastern Conference teams like the Boston Bruins. And I think that gives them a little bit of a better chance of matching up if they do face the Bruins somewhere down the road.
Mike, having said all that, you know, giving up the two second-rounders, Ray Shiro giving up the two second-rounders to San Jose, do you think that was too much, or do you think that was exactly what was needed to bring in a guy with Douglas Murray's physicality and veteran leadership?
That's a good question, Eddie. I mean, the problem is these holes were known the entire season. They were known as far back as last summer. I think that would be the one problem I do have with it, is that at this point you're not going to get a good deal if you are a buyer in this type of market. You're going to pay the types of prices that they did, which I think were overpayments. They gave up a great prospect in Morrow. They gave up the pair of second-rounders, as you mentioned, for Douglas Murray. And I think those are the going prices, and we might even see the prices rise over the next few days as guys get taken off the market. But it's something that, you know, last spring, Ray Shiro faced a similar situation. He needed exactly the same thing on defense, a guy that could move someone out from in front of the net, bring a physical presence, and the prices were too high, and he decided to just stand pat. And we all know what happened. The Penguins were bounced in the first round, a very disappointing season for them. And so I think he's maybe just taking a different approach there. He's got a season where there's no real salary cap impact. They've got the ability to bring on even $20 million more in salary cap hits at this point. And I think they figure, you know, who knows how long this window will last. Will they be able to keep Chris Letang, Sidney Crosby, and Evgeny Malkin for the rest of their careers or even the next few years? That's a big question at this point. And I think they realize, you know, this is as good a year as any to really go all in. And so sacrificing the future, it comes at a price if you want to bring in a guy like Brendan Morrow or a defenseman like Douglas Murray.
Mike, final question. You mentioned the Boston Bruins earlier. Were these two moves made with the Boston Bruins squarely in mind?
You know what? I think so. And you mentioned the earlier question where was Douglas Murray any better? I don't know that he's any better than some of the defensemen they have, but I think he's perfect if you want to play that matchup because you're going to face different teams in the Eastern Conference. I mean, I'm of the belief you have to win a number of different ways in playoffs. You're going to have your 6-5 games, you're going to have your 2-1 games, you're going to have your back-and-forth battles or your physical battles. And I think the Boston Bruins are definitely, if you look at up and down the Eastern Conference, there's not that many really good teams. And the Boston Bruins are right there at the top with the Penguins as one of the dominant and scary teams. I think if they get into a matchup with the Penguins, they certainly have the physical advantage. And I think you're exactly right where this might be in a direct response to saying, hey, if we do face Boston, we want to have those options in our lineup. Maybe Brendan Morrow doesn't play against some of the speedier teams like a Toronto or Montreal, but he's perfect for a series against Boston. He can match up against Milan Lucic and bring the same element, if not more. And I think that you're exactly right. It's something that now Ray Shiro and Dan Bylsma, head coach, they have the options. And options in this day and age of the salary cap, I think, are very valuable and certainly gives the Penguins as good a chance as any in the Eastern Conference this season.
For my money, nobody knows the Pittsburgh Penguins like Mike Colligan. Mike, thanks very much for joining us on NHL Midweek.
Absolutely, guys. Enjoy the game tomorrow night, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Mike. You as well.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
When we come back, we're going to break down Jacob Trouba's options. Will he go? Will he stay in the NCAA? Will he go to the CHL? Will he sign with the Jets? What will he do if he signs with the Jets? There's so many possibilities. We're going to go over each and every one of them after the break. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve live on TSN 1290. We're back on NHL Midweek. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, David Manuk of IllegalCurve.com, and Michael Remus. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, conveniently located at 1700 Cordon Avenue in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli that's been serving traditional deli food for nearly 30 years. Take it home or eat it there. Bernstein's Deli is your deli destination in South Winnipeg. Check out their website at bernsteinsdeli.com. By the way, I should know Bernstein's Deli is now open on Sundays starting at 9 a.m.
Yep. We were there the first week. Didn't go last week, but we were there the first week. I'm going to go this weekend again. It's actually perfect. It's in, as you know, it's in my backyard.
It is.
So I can actually just crawl out of bed, crawl down the street, have a corned beef sandwich, crawl back home, go back to bed. It's the best. Nice little Sunday.
Don't know how to respond to that. A lot has been made, guys, this week about Jacob Trouba. You know, he's finished his season with the University of Michigan, playing for Red Barons in there.
Yep.
And people are wondering, you know, what does that mean? There was some speculation that Trouba may opt to sign with the Winnipeg Jets, and it's kind of been, the topic's kind of been mum. You know, Gary Lawless was on TSN last night on the TSN Jets talking about the possibilities, and I want to kind of break down for the listeners some of the details, what encompasses a move to the National Hockey League, and what the options are for Jacob Trouba, because it's a little bit confusing, and I think people are a little bit confused, and as am I, about what would happen if this, or what would happen if that. So I guess we'll break it down kind of point by point. And the first thing to break down is Jacob Trouba has played 1 year in college, okay? He has the option of returning to the NCAA. He has 4 years of eligibility there. He has the option of doing that. That is one option. Number two is he can leave the NCAA and play in the CHL. I believe the Kitchener Rangers have his rights. Mm-hmm. Now, if a player signs or leaves the NCAA and plays in the CHL players, while they're paid very little, are still paid. And once you play in the CHL, you are then disqualified from ever playing in the NCAA again. So if Jacob Trouba leaves college to go to the CHL, he cannot opt to go back to college. I mean, he can go back to college, but he can't play in the NCAA. So he becomes disqualified.
Richie, we should mention just one thing really quickly about that NCAA to CHL route. It's not a very common route. For most players, as you guys know, that sign up to play college hockey, most of the time they'll play the full 4 years. But there have been guys in the past that have gone that route, and it's usually after their first year. That's important. Usually you don't see guys play 3 years of college, then play in the CHL. I think Adam Henrique did that.
Adam Henrique played for Windsor. No, I think Mike Comrie did that with Michigan.
Mike Comrie.
Kootenay, I believe it was. I forget exactly where he played in the WHL.
It's usually if you don't like your development, the path that you're taking.
And there are some people who lead you to believe that teams pressure players to make that decision to play more games, whatever it may be. I want to hear your opinion, by the way. We want to hear your opinion. And tweeting at Illegal Curve, you can give us your thoughts on what Jacob Trouba will do, should do, whatever you think.
The Jets have said that they will not talk to Trouba until he talks to them, for the record.
I'm not sure what that really means.
Well, that's their statement.
Now, if Jacob Trouba goes to the CHL, once he plays in the CHL, he cannot then play in the AHL until he's either accrued 4 years in the CHL, which wouldn't be possible at this point because
or 20.
You can't play in the CHL past being 20.
Right.
And he's already 19.
Yeah.
Or you have to be 20 years old by December 31st of that year to play in the AHL. So let me simplify it. Mark Scheifele can't play in the CHL this year because he's not 20. So for example, if you're
regular season.
Right. Right. And we'll talk about that in a second.
Yeah.
So if you're if Mark Scheifele is a 1994 birthday, in theory, I don't remember what his birth year is. If you're a 1994 birthday, you can't play in the AHL until the 2014-2015 season. So anything before that, you cannot play. And that's not in the NHL CBA. That is a contract between the CHL and the NHL. So people need to realize that. So a player then, so Trouba can't go from the NCAA to the CHL and then to the AHL. Now there is an exception to that rule. CHL players, if you follow, CHL players can play in the AHL after the CHL season is over.
Right.
Even though they're under 20.
Right.
So, for example, I believe this would be the case with Cody Hodgson with the Manitoba Moose. He was in the OHL, and he joined the Moose for their stretch run to the Calder Cup final against Hershey, and he played in a few games.
Then he was called up by the Canucks for the playoffs.
Right.
And that can happen with Trouba as well. Basically, what that means, Richie, to interject here really quickly, Trouba, if he signs a amateur contract, not an entry-level well, it's still an entry-level contract,
right,
and goes and decides to play with Kitchener, which we don't know if that's going to happen, but it's an option, and that's the second option. He cannot play with the Ice Caps until the playoffs, until the season's over. Until the CHL season's over, and he goes and plays for the Ice Caps.
And that doesn't, that one thing to note is, you know, that's a great way to put it. One thing to note is that doesn't cut into his eligibility.
Right.
Okay? It doesn't cut into his eligibility. Now, another option he has is to leave the NCAA, sign with the Jets, and actually play in the AHL. Because the AHL and the NCAA don't have a contract. They don't have an agreement like the CHL and the NCAA do. Now, it's quite rare. Players generally stay in the NCAA, as you mentioned, as he longer, because they like the college experience and what comes along with that. But he actually has that option. Now, it's hard to figure out exactly what the ramifications are of him playing in the AHL. Now, he has to sign to play in the AHL, to leave the NCAA, and for Jacob Trouba to play in the AHL. He has to sign either an entry-level contract with the Winnipeg Jets or an amateur tryout contract, which would essentially allow him to play in the AHL for the end of this year, and then he would start his clock next year on his entry-level deal. But yet, as far as I can tell, and based on the wording of the CBA, and this is the previous CBA, we don't have the updated CBA because there's only a memorandum of understanding out. From what we can gather, the Jets can also sign him to an entry-level contract, play him in the AHL, if, of course, he agrees. And his AHL games, as far as I can tell, and I correct me if I'm wrong, and people can correct me if I'm wrong, will not count towards his entry-level contract, and he would start next year afresh on the beginning of the first year of a three-year deal. Now, one stipulation is his fourth option is, of course, signing out of the NCAA with the Jets. He has to play in six games. That's regular season and playoffs for his first year of his entry-level deal to kick in. Now, that would kind of be his motivation, you'd assume. Is you want to, and the reason, just to explain to the listeners, the reason you want to get rid of an entry-level year, if you're Trouba, is that means you're a year closer to being an RFA, and you're a year closer eventually to free agency, and you get arbitration rights a year earlier, because you get arbitration rights after 4 years in the National Hockey League. So everything, you know, speeds up for him, and that's something that he would want to do. So the Jets, six games total. So if they played him three games in the regular season and three games in the playoffs, that's a year of his entry level. Now, usually that's 10 games. But because of a 48-game season, this year it's only six games, which is what you saw. Mark Scheifele only played four. He could have played five, but he only played four. David?
Well, it's interesting because a lot of the college coaches from the last lockout were wanting to have this change for this lockout, because part of the problem was that players were playing until, you know, late in the college season, and then they would come into they would want to sign with the NHL, but they might not commit till too late. And so what the college coaches wanted instituted was like a June 15th deadline, because what that would do is it wouldn't give them a hole in their roster to try and get a player for July or August. So it's interesting, but from a player's point of view, why would you do it? Well, because you want to get rid of that, you know, your entry-level contract year. So if you can eliminate one extra year, why wouldn't you do it? Of course you're going to do it.
And they call it a slide. That's how it's quote-unquote slide is how it's termed in the CBA. What happens is if you don't play six games, then your contract slides to next year and you start anew. So it's very confusing. I think just look at it from both perspectives. If you're Jacob Trouba, you want to sign now, if you're essentially guaranteed, whether it's on paper or not, likely not, but a handshake deal, that you're going to play at least six games. Because if not, then if you sign and don't, maybe you want to go back to college. That option's out the window. And so you're leaving in that option. Now, if you're the Jets, and somebody tweeted at us, a listener tweeted at us, you know, does the Hainsey issue affect the Trouba issue? Well, it may very well. Now, Trouba's a right-side defenseman on a team that has a fair amount of right-side defensemen. But if you're the Jets, You have to take that into account. So you have to weigh, what does he provide to you? What is the cost benefit of burning an entry level year? And it's a difficult decision. And Izzy, I don't know if it's one that the Jets are willing to make right now in the heat of the playoff race based on the ramifications down the road.
So intriguing, though. You've got a guy that just was had an unbelievable first year at the University of Michigan. He won the best defenseman at the World Junior Championships, winning a gold for the United States. And by all accounts, from any scout that we've talked to, he's a steal at number nine. Chevy has a steal at number nine. And when you factor in that he has to make a decision whether or not he wants to finish his college career or go right to the NHL, because the way it looks right now, he could possibly crack the top six for the Jets next year. And sure, Hainsey factors into it, but I think that really at this point, if he wants to start his NHL career and sign his name on an NHL contract, it's quite possible that he'll be in the NHL next year.
I should say the Jets, are willing to make the decision. It's just going to be a tough decision, but as you make a great point, and Red Barons and his coach says he's ready. It's not really a question of whether or not he's ready.
It's like Dave Minuk when Drew went to Columbia for his honeymoon. Dave was ready to go. Dave was ready to be on here for four shows.
There are countless options, and we're going to find out what exactly Jacob Trouba and the Jets decide. Or as Dave mentioned, Trouba's going to be in the driver's seat there before the Jets make that decision, because his cap is going to contact the Jets first. Just another storyline in an interesting Winnipeg Jets season. We're halfway through the show. When we come back, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve live on TSN 1290. Halfway through the show, Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, David Minuk of IllegalCurve.com, and Michael Remus. You're listening to NHL Midweek. At the top of the hour, Paul Edmonds and the Inside Pitch brings in another baseball season. Of course, Paul's on once per month, and the Gold Eyes are just getting started for another great run. Another reminder, actually, I should note, is that the Blue Jays, everybody wants to talk about the Blue Jays. They're the talk of the town. You should see the reception they got at Polo Park here in Winnipeg when they did their caravan this summer. The Blue Jays can now be heard on TSN 1290, beginning with four Sunday games in April. First game, April 7th, against the Red Sox, with coverage starting 11:30 a.m. It's about half an hour before Ezzy wakes up.
The TSN 1290 NHL Midweek Hotline.
We're joined on the line by Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News. Mike, thanks for joining us tonight. How are you?
Good evening, gentlemen. Down here in Sunrise, Florida with the Sabres, where it's a little chilly. I did the conversion for you. It's about 19 Celsius. I know you're not going to have a lot of sympathy for that.
The potholes are getting a little big here with our warm weather. I'd say it's about, 15 Fahrenheit? Dave, you're better at Fahrenheit than I am.
Yeah, about that.
Yeah, about 15 Fahrenheit. So you did the conversion better than I did, Mike. But, we look at the Buffalo Sabres and, of course, covering them for the Buffalo News. This season's been nothing short of a disaster, really. Yet the Sabres are only 5 points out of the playoffs. Is this a team that has a reasonable shot at even attempting to make the playoffs? Or, in reality, is this season and team really a write-off?
Well, they still have a reasonable shot, but certainly they have to roll off four or five more wins here. I mean, if they win tomorrow night against the Florida Panthers, that'll be four wins in five games. And, you've got to run off eight wins in nine to get back into this thing. The issue is not only being 5 points back, but having to climb over a bunch of teams. But ultimately, guys, this is not a playoff team. So many of these players have underachieved, and this is a team that clearly, and I think so, they should be selling at the deadline. All you got to do is look at what the Sharks and the Dallas Stars are starting to do, and they are closer to the playoffs in the West than Buffalo is in the East.
Mike, there's a few guys that everyone has their eye on. As far as forwards go, Jochen Hecht is a UFA, but a lot of the other guys are locked up for a few more years. We've heard rumblings that teams are interested in Drew Stafford. Which forwards specifically do you think the Buffalo Sabres right now are taking calls on?
Well, I certainly think they're taking calls on a lot of guys. Drew Stafford has been a healthy scratch the last two games. I talked to him today. He's going to be back in tomorrow night. Thomas Vanek is iffy. He's got a a muscle strain. Stafford's got 4 goals in 31 games, but he's a former number one pick and a former 31-goal scorer. There's no shortage of teams interested, thinking they can fix him if they can get him out of Buffalo. There's a lot of talk about Jason Pominville, the captain, and Thomas Vanek, for that matter. They have 1 year left in their deals. A team going for the Stanley Cup this year might want to take a run at a Jason Pominville kind of guy. So there's a lot of forwards here, and you know, defense, UFAs coming up, Robin Regier and Jordan Leopold. There's a lot of guys who will be very interesting to watch in the deadline. This team can make a lot of moves and get better quickly if they make the right ones.
So, Mike, which defensemen do you think are actually on the block, though?
I think clearly the Sabres are looking to move Robin Regier and Jordan Leopold. I think the Douglas Murray trade certainly has to pique interest. If he's worth 2 second-round picks, I would think that's at least the standard you could get for Robin Regier, who's still pretty serviceable and is a physical guy and has played in Game 7 of the Stanley Cup. So I think you're looking at either Regier or Leopold or both moving before the deadline.
Joined by Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, talking about the Buffalo Sabres and the prospects of them maybe purging the roster heading into Wednesday's trade deadline. Mike, we've heard rumblings that Ryan Miller may also be available. Is there any truth to that?
Well, you know, it depends on how you look at it. I mean, the biggest thing with Miller right now, he's in the same boat as Vanek and Pominville, 1 year left in his deal. You know, about a little over $6.2 million. But there's just not that much of a market for goaltending right now, guys. I mean, realistically, who out there really, really, really needs a goaltender that's going for a Stanley Cup right now? You'd have to sit down and really study it. But, you know, it doesn't seem to be that much out there. The talk about Miller has kind of cooled. I think Miller's the kind of guy you trade in a deal at the draft when teams really sit down and assess what they want for the offseason. So I don't think they're looking to actively trade Miller. I think they'd like to continue to build around Miller, but I think at this point the Sabres have to have their ears open for any discussion anybody wants to start with them.
Mike, you know, we mentioned this earlier, and the Sabres are only 5 points out, but as you said, they might want to officially start considering themselves sellers. As far as all of the players that we've mentioned, and, you know, we haven't mentioned anyone, we haven't not mentioned anyone. You know, we've thrown in Miller, Vanek, Pominville. Who do you think gets the most in return, or, you know, as far as more realistic options, who do you what out of those other players, Regier, Leopold, Stafford, who do you think gets the most in return as far as the more realistic players that they move?
Well, the biggest package you could get would be for Vanek. I think you could get a Rick Nash kind of package, but I don't think the Sabres are going to trade Vanek. I still think he's their best player when he's healthy. I think they're looking to see what they can get for Drew Stafford and what they can get for Robin Regier. Darcy Regier at the deadline last year waited right till the end of the last half an hour. He got a first-round pick for Paul Gostad, and he got Cody Hodgson for Zach Kassian. So I think Darcy Regier is going to take this right to the end, and he's overly patient to a fault sometimes, but, boy, that's pretty interesting that he got that first-round pick. He's going to try to hold people up again this year. I think he's going to really try to go for more picks for Stafford and Regier. Regier has a no trade, by the way. It hasn't been approached about waiving it, but I'm pretty certain that he would waive it for the right team, especially out west for a cup contender.
Mike, how has Ron Ralston fared behind the bench?
You know, it's been interesting. They've improved in some areas. They've been better defensively. Their power play still last in the league, but until last night it had scored in 4 games in a row. But then last night, you know, it's a clunker. I mean, they don't have enough consistency on this club. They had gone 7-3-3. They had won 3 in a row, and then they had 7 shots on goal through 40 minutes. And you said to Ron Ralston after the game, how does this kind of thing happen? And he's like, you ask the players what they say. And we've always asked the players, and they never have an answer, and that's the problem with this team. So he's pretty disgusted with last night's effort. It's kind of interesting, a guy who's only been a coach for a little more than a month, and he's seen some of the things we've seen for years under Lindy Ruff. Realistically, this team and this roster needs to be reworked.
I guess that leads to the final question here, Mike. If the roster needs to be reworked, is Darcy Regier the guy to do it?
I don't know. I would think you would not want Darcy Regier to be the guy to do it. He's certainly going to do it at the trade deadline. But after that, can they bring Darcy Regier back if they finish, say, 12th or 13th in the East? Clearly, they tried to scapegoat Lindy Ruff, and his message had gotten stale. And I think most teams in that situation would have fired the coach long before. But I think there was a good element of the fan base that thought Regier and Ruff were both going to go out the door together, and were very surprised when Ruff went out and Regier stayed. how Regier does. The deadline will certainly add to how they judge him, but there's segments of owner Terry Pegula's group that loves Regier, but how do you keep a GM if they finish 12th, 13th, 14th in the East? It's going to be very difficult. The Sabres are a fascinating team to watch, what they do with the deadline, what they do with the GM. Really interesting scenarios going to be played out here.
We can't wait. Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, thanks very much for joining us on NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you.
Always a pleasure with Mike. There's so much going on there, and Drew Stafford is a player we mentioned on this past Saturday's show.
UND boy?
And UND boy, but, you know, the Jets kind of need a right winger, a big guy with talent, reasonable contract, I think, if you look at it.
I got to quickly, Richie, give you credit. Early this season, a couple weeks, you were mentioning Robin Regier. As far as I'm concerned, what the Jets need the most is a stay-at-home, bruising veteran defenseman. You look at how they can't get out of their own zone. Mm-hmm. They've got guys that can move the puck, Enstrom, Bufflin, Bogo, but, you know, sometimes you need this, you know, especially around playoff time, you need a guy that can just simply clear guys in front of the net. And Regier, you have to think maybe you move somebody for Regier, and you were on that bandwagon early on. I got to give you credit for that.
Trade deadline coverage starts on TSN 1290 at 6 a.m. April 3rd, Wednesday, a week from today, and it goes all the way through to our show, NHL Midweek, next week until 8 o'clock. So 6 a.m. to 8 p.m., you're covered on TSN 1290. Coming up, one final segment. You're listening to NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve, live on TSN 1290. One last segment on NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve. That was quick. Richard Pollock filling in the host chair for Drew Mandel, joined in studio by Ezra Ginsberg, David Manouk of IllegalCurve.com, and Michael Remus. Paul Edmonds is in the building. He'll have inside pitch for you at the top of the hour, 7 p.m. sharp. Paul's guests include Jason Dixon and Price Kendall. Boys, this week, on this past Sunday, in fact, the Tampa Bay Lightning were in town, and they were in town without their head coach, Guy Boucher. The assistants were behind the bench, Lacroix and Raymond, but they were soon pushed aside for the new head coach, Don Cooper. Don Cooper, for people who don't know, is the former coach of the Norfolk Admirals, and I believe Syracuse Crunch this year.
Yep.
Tampa Bay had changed their affiliate, and he had success both last year winning the Calder Cup, and this year I think the second best record in the league, if not the best. The move, I don't know if I'd say necessarily it was controversial, but I think it has some ramifications down the road. I first want to start off with the Guy Boucher angle, and then I want to move to the Don Cooper angle. I know we're tight on time, but let's try and do this as best we can. Do you think, first off, Ezzy, do you think that the firing of Guy Boucher was warranted?
That's a tough question. I still don't really know. It's been 4 or 5 days now. I'm not sure. You know, Tampa Bay has struggled big time this year. Everybody knows that. All you have to do is look at the standings and see that they're second last. But the way I look at it, it all starts with goaltending. I've mentioned this on the show again and again and again. The Tampa Bay Lightning are loaded with stars, and I know LeCavalier's injured, and I know that Ryan Malone is injured, but if you just look at up and down the lineup, Corey Conacher's come in as a rookie. He's had a good year. Stamkos is obviously leading the league in goals. St. Louis's been good. Purcell's been pretty good. The Lightning are just chocked full of talent, and I actually think Sammy Salo has been very good on defense. Mm-hmm. They've acquired him. I think Matt Carl's been good. The goaltending has been arguably the worst in the entire NHL. Lindback has had a horrible year, and we're starting to see that he's been exposed without Shea Weber and Ryan Suter in front of him. And I don't think that he did deserve to be fired. You know, Guy Boucher leads the team to the conference finals in his first year, and then they struggle last year. They didn't have any goaltending. They had problems on defense. They addressed it. And, you know, Stevie Y came into Winnipeg and said, you know, I didn't like the way that the team was playing, the way, the attitude of the team. And, you know, who am I to question Stevie Y? But, you know, Guy Boucher did a pretty good job considering, if you look at the shots they faced, weren't actually that at the top of the league. Lindback was horrible, and Garon was horrible in relief. And, you know, he made a decision. Okay, you know what? I'm second last in the NHL. There's a outside shot we make the playoffs this year. I'm firing Boucher. I'm going to bring Boucher, pardon me. I'm going to bring Cooper in here, see if we can make a late run and straighten things out here.
I think goaltending is a part of the system, though, although I do think Lindbäck's had a poor year in that. I always look back at Calgary. You know, Kiprusoff under Keenan was a different goalie than Kiprusoff under Brent Sutter. I think that's important.
Daryl Sutter.
Well, Brent Sutter, both, really. Because he was, that's true, as Daryl Sutter, then Keenan, and then Brent Sutter again. The save percentage has varied quite a bit. I don't think the talent level necessarily varied. Dave, you're around the team. You were around the team on Sunday, around the Lightning and around the Jets. What was the sentiment around the Lightning team? And Ezzie, of course, was in the room as well. And what were you hearing in terms of the reason that Guy Boucher was let go?
Well, you know what? I have had an opportunity to talk to him a couple of times when he was in Winnipeg. And I have to say, he was one of the most cerebral coaches to have a conversation with. Really engaging. He would sit and he would chat with the media following games or during the pregame interviews. And it wasn't like he would sit there for 5 minutes, give you his 5 minutes, and then leave and give you a lot of cliche answers. He literally spoke and he gave you very thoughtful comments. And so it was unfortunate, but part of, I think, what the problem was with Boucher was his honesty. And I think that part of the problem was he was a little too honest, and I think some of his players probably didn't like that.
To me, I'm going to go quickly because I want to touch on Don Cooper before the end of the show. To me, I just want to put out one thing. I think that the loss of Guy Boucher, at least of the coach of the Lightning, I hope he gets another job, is a loss for hockey fans, you know, fans of offensive hockey. And I think one of his downfall, you guys mentioned the goaltending, that's a factor. I think also, you know, his system leaves the defense out to dry. And as much as the defensemen are really good at moving the puck, at times, you know, a guy like Matt Carl not great in his own zone. And a guy like Sammy Salah can wear down a bit and still make some poor decisions. Overall, he's a really good defenseman. Sometimes he makes some poor decisions. And so some of the defensemen they had in those positions weren't necessarily maybe the best fit or weren't the best fit for Guy Boucher's system and how he leaves sometimes them out on an island. I think the Jets game was a really good example, was the goal Enstrom scored. The third goal, I believe, of the game was when the two defensemen, I believe it was Hedman and Brewer, were in the corner. And Stamkos is left guarding the front of the net, and he leaves Enstrom, and Enstrom scores. And other teams, they would protect the middle a little bit more. Guy Boucher, though, does coach offense, and I hope he gets a job again because he's creative, he's energetic, he's got a certain charisma, and he may have rubbed some people the wrong way, but to me as a hockey fan, I thought his games, the way he coached, made his teams aesthetically pleasing. Don Cooper, though, guys, is a guy who's had great success. Great success in the USHL, great success in the AHL. A young up-and-comer, really, for the coaching ranks. He has a law degree. He has a certain different background, I think, than maybe a lot of coaches. What are your thoughts, Ezzie, on that hire?
Well, you know, I wasn't the only person that thought Lindy Ruff was going to get hired because of his relationship with Stevie Y. And let's be honest, he was the most eligible former coach out there. I mean, Lindy Ruff, everyone had their eye on him. As far as Don Cooper, everything that I've read is that Don Cooper is a player's coach, and he is someone that plays more, or coaches more, I should say, of a hard-working style of rough hockey. Not so much, in the vein of an old-school coach, but he's someone that's more so into that style of hockey. Now, you know, when you want to learn more about a coach, you want to know if he's up-tempo, defensive, all that stuff. That's, I feel, sometimes a little bit generic. What I've learned in the short time that I've read about Cooper, because let's be honest, not a lot of people know who this guy is. He's a winner,
mm-hmm.
and he's won at every single level. And you know, you mentioned the USHL. Before that, he was in the North American Hockey League, which is a step below the USHL. He was a high school coach of the year, and this is the type of guy that people don't realize. Stevie Y went after him in the USHL to coach Norfolk. Mm-hmm. What does he do? He wins there. And so Stevie Y looks at what he did in Norfolk, Corey Conacher, Richard Panik, all these guys. He wants him to lead these guys to the next level. So it looks like he's very highly regarded and has done nothing but win, Richie.
So, I mean, really what Ezzie's saying is right, because he's basically springboarding from guys he's coached in lower leagues into the NHL. So even mm-hmm. though he has no NHL experience of his own, he knows the system and he knows these players. Well, he doesn't know the system in the sense that he's going to change it to his system.
He knows his, yeah.
Right, but he knows his system. But these players are familiar with him, a lot of the guys who are playing for the Lightning right now. So that'll be an advantage to a guy who's coming in cold with no NHL experience from a different organization.
Yeah, and the Lightning were playing their old system on Sunday. They were still playing Guy Boucher's system. You mentioned Corey Conacher, Ezzie. He had a quote in the Tampa Bay Tribune saying, what to expect from a Don Cooper coach team. A lot of physical play, a lot of swagger on the ice.
Yep.
He likes fast paced. He likes jumping on their D, being aggressive. Quick transitions, aggressive in the offensive and even defensive zone. He gives you a lot of room to make skill plays when you need to, and he creates a lot of speed.
And something just quickly on that, Richie, you know, Guy Boucher, I think, is a really good coach. I agree with you. They weren't the hardest team to play against. When you watch the Lightning, yeah, they had a great power play. It slipped a little bit here. But, you know, maybe that's something that Stevie Y looked at his team and said, you know what, we're not hard enough to play against. And to get into the playoffs now, just to get in, you have to be a hard team to play against, because a lot of times you'll play a team with less talent, but, you know, that will forecheck you to death. Phoenix Coyotes come to mind. So maybe that's another thing that maybe kind of made him want to make that switch.
The one thing is, there are some parallels in terms of success in the past and younger coaches like Guy Boucher. Don Cooper has a lot of Guy Boucher traits. If you go back a few years ago, people were probably saying very similar things about Guy Boucher that they're saying about Don Cooper today.
Keep your eye on.
We're at that point of the show, guys. Last couple of minutes, Ezzy, keep an eye on this week.
I know you guys are going to make fun of me a little bit for this, but Lou Lamoriello went out and acquired Matt D'Agostini. Didn't give up a roster player, so now he's went out and he's got Loktionov, Ponikarovsky. He's not going to have to make many moves. Matt D'Agostini is a guy that just last year put up quite a few points, and he struggled this year, and he's been a healthy scratch in St. Louis. But again, he gives up not a lot of draft pick to get Matt D'Agostini. He's a guy that the Devils really need as a third or fourth liner, and I think, you know, he's going to end up contributing just like Loktionov has.
David.
Well, I mean, we talked about it earlier today, and I think we have to keep an eye on the Jacob Trouba situation. At the beginning of the year when he was drafted, it essentially sounded like there was no chance of him coming to the NHL because he wanted to play and he wanted to finish out his college career, even though it hadn't begun yet. And even throughout the year, the talk was, you know, about him coming, and he said, no, I want to play college. I want to play under this system. Now that he's had that opportunity, perhaps the dollar signs are being waved in his face, and he's like, well, you know, there's a reason for me to go to the NHL. So that's the situation we're going to have to keep an eye on this week.
I'm going to forego keeping an eye on and I think say a few kind words about Winnipegger Wayne Fleming, who unfortunately passed this week, a guy that's known to Canadian hockey fans, a native Winnipegger, and a great coach and well-respected. I think if you talk to the coaches in the National Hockey League, the respect they had for Wayne Fleming was second to none. He's gone far too early, and it's definitely a loss for the game of hockey. And, of course, our thoughts and prayers with his family. That's it. NHL Midweek.
That's too quick.
Gone.
An hour goes by, Richie, like it's like 5 minutes.
I want a preview, of course. Saturday, our show's on at 8 a.m.
Yep.
Because the Jets play at 2 p.m. against Carolina. We're on at 8 a.m., the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, bright and early.
Who's driving that day?
You're going to be here at 6 a.m.
Yeah, right.
Make sure you're ready to go. The
morning papers will be up.
Morning papers on illegalcurve.com will be up. Just to let you know, Saturday's show, our trade deadline preview. We're going to go around the National Hockey League, break down each and every team, what they need, what they can use to buy their need, or what they're going to be selling. It's going to be interesting. I'd like to thank our guests, Mike Colligan of the Hockey Writers, Mike Harrington of the Buffalo News, and of course our sponsor, Bernstein's Deli. You can follow us at Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and Instagram, at Illegal Curve. Stay tuned for the Inside Pitch with Paul Edmonds. It's coming up next. We'll see you Saturday morning at 8 a.m.
NHL Midweek. TSN 1290.